Okay, does anybody have any questions? I'm gonna give you the pattern for the, what we call the eye movement integration. But does anybody have any other questions? Let's see.
So pretty much what you're dealing with is breaking the system with the physiological
and with the eye movements as well. So it's in the book, but I started with her stuck state. So we started here, and we found something to work with. And I had her look at it as if it was here. So she's not quite associated yet. This is a safe place. It's kind of like your meta position. And then I had her step into it and fully associate into it. And as soon as she did, you could see it in her face. Like, I noticed her lips went like that. And so she starts to talk about it. And she has these sort of rigid movements like this. And I had her step back out of it. Think of a resourceful time or a reference experience, and liberation for her came up. And as she was explaining, her gestures started to do like this, and they were more flowing. Her face was looser. It wasn't so taut. And then I had her walk back into this, and I could see that she was reassociating it, so I could see the tension in her face. And then what I had her do was go back to her gestures and start to exaggerate those gestures, and you exaggerate them more and more until you turn them into what was the resourceful physiology and gestures. So you move them into that.
So you were choosing a lot of kinesthetic, right?
Well, she was coming from the kinesthetic. That was
so
one of the things.
So you were calibrating that she was coming from kinesthetic, so you went with kinesthetic.
But it would probably work anyway. It would have probably worked anyway. It probably will work no matter where the synesthesia is at.
But, I mean, I was wondering why you chose kinesthetic, because that works well.
Well, no, this is, so you'll notice you'll have different options here. When you change your physiology, you're going to change your state. There's no way you cannot. So
you just chose a lot of kinesthetic as the physiology?
I didn't choose it so much as it. You definitely want to watch that. You want to see where they're coming from. And try out each one of the ones that are listed here.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah, so everything that I demonstrated is in the exercise.
So you're just trying different ones.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't even say, like, if they're more visual, then something else would work better. Just try them all. I don't think there's a one works better than the other. It's mainly what's going to work for that person. What I thought was great, though, is she had her own sort of movement that came out of it. And you're not going to always have that happen, or maybe you won't always recognize that. But for her, it was easy to see that she had this other thing that was coming up. And so I'm using that. It's kind of like her strategy. I'm going to use her strategy for her. Yep.
This exercise has anything to do with EMDR technique?
Yeah, it will. EMDR actually was derived, I believe, from somebody who had taken NLP training and decided to take that. This came first. Eye movements. Eye access and cues came before EMDR.
Francine Shapiro, the developer of EMDR, was sitting in one of Robert Hiltz's trainings when he was teaching eye movement integration, and this probably would have been around the late 1980s. And then she took off of eye movement integration and decided to call it eye movement desensitization. I can't remember what the R is.
Release, I think.
Release, and created a whole brand of never credited NLP.
And that is not the first time that something like that has happened.
There's a videotape of it. Steve Andreas, or Robert, no, actually
Robert.
Has the video of her in the class that he's teaching.
Yeah.
True story.
So, any other questions about it? So, with the eye movement integration, you're going to do a figure eight and you're going to go up like that. Sometimes if you go down, it can make people dizzy or lightheaded, so you want to go up. and follow that pattern and do that maybe twice. And then you do a circle one direction, do the circle the opposite direction, and then end up going back and forth. And you might see them start to move their head if they do instruct them to stop moving their head and only move their eyes. Because if I move my head, then I'm not really moving my eyes, right? Yeah, you want them to be thinking about the problem. If they stop thinking about the problem and then they just go off and are looking around, it might not work.
But they're thinking of the problem with the resources.
No, all they have to do is think about the problem. And part of this is anchoring, creating a floor anchor for the problem situation. So they step here, they associate into it. You have them see, hear, and feel what they would see, hear, and feel in the problem. And when they step out of it, break state, think of something resourceful place. Elicit that resource, elicit the body language that goes with that, snap out of that, come back in, and you want to see when they step back, you want to see that the anchor has taken, that just by stepping into this, they come back to that problem space. If they don't, then you want to re-anchor it. Have them step out, have them come back in, and try it again. So this does create an anchor. So once you're anchored there, you can do the eye movement integration. And they don't have to think about it a whole lot, but I usually tell them, you know, keep thinking about the problem as I'm going through it. But if they're really anchored, you don't really have to.
I've seen some demos of this online where they're actually looking for places where the eyes don't track. Mm-hmm. You know, where I didn't. That wasn't really part of what you were. Are you looking for that while you're?
Sometimes. Sometimes you can spot the synesthesia by there's a little flicker in the eye. Or it could be an imprint, which you're going to learn about. You'd learn about in Master Practitioner.
Some people then they go over that area. Mm-hmm. They're like erasing it.
Yeah, if you notice something like that, I would go back over it a few times, see if it lessens, and if it doesn't, then it might not have anything to do with it. If it does lessen it, then it probably is working. That's probably a good sign that it's working. I'll give you an example. My son has some neurological deficits, and which is hard to explain. We bring him to a neurologist, and it's hard for them to pinpoint it. So I decided to try this on him, and I had him follow my hand, and then I would hit a certain point, and it would stress him out, and he didn't want to do it anymore. So, I mean, this is all about gaining access again to neurology that you've left out, which will give you more resources. And so for him, it's more about developmentally there's something missing and his neurology hasn't developed yet. So and some, you know, I'll do this with him to try to help him sort of develop that. I don't know if it's working or not, but so you could be working with someone who has something like that and it might not have anything to do with it, but it could as well.
One other question, just sure. About the term synesthesia.
Mm-hmm. Can you spell it?
That is kind of just like a general term for sensory overlap, or overlapping one sensory channel on another one. Are you referring to it in terms of that's the problem area, or are you referring to it and this is the technique we're using to fix the problem? How are you using
No, it's more like the problem area. But I hate to call it a problem area because sometimes synesthesias are very beneficial. Like I said, athletes, high-performance athletes, you probably have synesthesias for things that you're very good at.
When I read a big piece, it's a visual construct that I carry around in my head all the time.
Yeah.
It's like a visual thing. You can see it all at once. But there's a sound aspect to it, too. Mm-hmm. So that's just curious how you're using the term. In this case, you're actually using it for the thing you were working on.
Exactly.
The issue.
Yeah, where there's too much information being clumped in one representational channel, so much so that it's overwhelming and you're stuck in it. So we're sort of releasing that.
It's stuck in one channel.
Usually, yeah.
And now you're calling that a synesthesia.
When it's all clumped in one channel, where that's self-talk or a kinesthetic feeling or visual, but usually it's clumped in some. A lot of times it's in the kinesthetic. Not always, but. A lot of times it is. It's a feeling of being stuck, that kind of thing, or weighted down. And she even said that, I feel weighted down here. Yeah.
Suggestions, since it's almost in the
Yeah, we need to practice.
We might want to have people just do the EMI part rather than all of it, so they can at least get that piece in.
Okay, so we're going to do groups of two. We're going to practice this, and just do the EMI part. And it is in your book. It's on number four, but I would write this pattern down so you know the pattern to go. I don't think it tells you the pattern, but it doesn't illustrate it. So let's do that. Yes. Oh, you were raising your hand. Okay. All right, so find a stuck state, anchor it to the floor. So with this, with just the EMI, you don't need to come up with a resource state. Just anchor that problem state to the floor, and then the partner, the guide goes through and does the EMI. Okay. You step out of it. Well, you would want to elicit what the change is there, have them step out of it, then have them step back into it and see what happens. And then if the problem's still coming up, run the EMI again. Okay. All right. Do about 10 minutes each. Should not take long. Should be quick. Groups of two.